Dakota, D.C. And Bill Flores joins us. Good morning. How are you?
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
Going to be a little warmer up there this week?
Well, no, actually, it's colder than heck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just saw the pictures.
It's supposed to get down to like 9 tomorrow.
Wow. Yeah.
First time since I've been elected that I've seen the Potomac frozen from bank to bank.
Wow.
When I flew in yesterday.
Well, speaking of, did you get to see our buddy Ben Downs? You know, he's up there.
He's coming by this afternoon.
Is he? Okay. Well, I knew it was a big town. I didn't know if he was going to be able to get by there or not to see you. I guess the big story coming out of D.C. yesterday is that the president did, in fact, veto the XL pipeline bill. So your thoughts there?
Well, of course, I think like 70% of the American population that believes that this is a good thing for America, he's voted to put special interest ahead of hardworking American families. It's really tragic that he's done this. And, of course, one of the things he talked about was environmental protection. Well, pipelines are a safer and more environmentally sensitive way to transport anything than putting them in rail cars. And so, you know, he's gone the wrong direction. And even if he were correct, there he goes again. He puts the interest of bugs ahead of the interest of paychecks for American families.
So what is the next step? Where do we go from here? Are there enough votes to override?
I don't think we can override it. We're going to try, but I doubt that we can override it in either the House or the Senate, which is really a shame. I think what this, at the end of the day, if we're not successful in overriding the veto, I think it's just one of those things you use to remind the American people when it comes to November 2016, the differences between somebody like a President Obama being in the White House versus somebody that has an appreciation for the value of American jobs.
I never like to have this go off the front pages, and that's ISIS. You know, maybe sometimes it takes a horribly brutal act for it to remain on the front page, but do I sense that Congress doesn't feel like they need to take any action as far as giving the president some sort of authorization to take action against extremist groups?
Well, I think most of Congress would like to take action to give the president powers to deal with the Islamic State. Now, I mean, candidly speaking, he has that today under the Iraq AUMF that exists and under the general AUMF that was granted following 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
He has the power to do it. I believe that it'd be important for Congress to give him the power. And the power should probably be very broad. The real challenge we have, and this is the challenge that I face as well, is that nobody trusts the president to be able to carry out the job. I mean, virtually everything he's touched from a national security standpoint or from a foreign policy standpoint has just been a disaster. And so to the extent we give him broad blank check authorization, there's just no telling what he can mess up. If past performance is any indication of future performance, and I think it is.
Well, is part of it also that, you know, there is a chance that there might be a Republican who would succeed him in the White House, and the Democrats don't necessarily want to give that Republican that power?
Well, I haven't really thought that far ahead. I mean, that could be something that's going through the minds of Democrats, but I really don't know if that's one of the issues that they're thinking about. And the main thing that I've heard the Democrats say is they don't want boots on the ground. I think no American wants to have boots on the ground in this particular fight. But that said, I don't know that that's an option you ought to take off the table for this president or any other president, because we don't know what the situation is going to be like in 12 months or 18 months or 24 months from now.
Yeah, last week John Boehner was over and over shown talking about how the House had done their part when they sent the bill over to the Senate to take care of funding the government. And, of course, the Department of Homeland Security, it looks like Mitch McConnell blinked a little bit, because now he says he may have to come up with some sort of a clean funding bill for the Department of Homeland Security to separate it from the immigration questions that they have. Is that what you see happening over there?
Yeah, I do believe he blinked, and what he's done is he's trying to, from what I understand, and I haven't seen all the wording yet, but he's done a two-step process where there would be an initial vote on to undo the president's unlawful amnesty action, and then that would be followed by a vote on a clean DHS funding bill. In other words, the Department of Homeland Security would be funded through September 30th, and it wouldn't have any of the provisions in it that the House added to stop the president's unlawful activities.
You know, there's a phrase that's used in D.C. It's called a key vote. They scorecard people based on elected officials on how they vote on certain key votes. And it looks like this may end up being one of those key vote situations. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure out there, is there not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I haven't seen the key vote indicators yet coming from the outside groups, but you can bet within the next 48 hours you'll see a ton of them coming out from various groups that want to weigh in on one side or the other of this particular vote.
Well, the one that I read this morning was from the Heritage Action. Is that part of the Heritage Foundation?
Well, it's the sister organization to the Heritage Foundation. And this is, I mean, they've expressed their interest and, I mean, their interest in this. I haven't seen a key vote alert from Heritage Action yet, though.
Okay.
But I'm assuming that several of the pro and anti-immigration groups are going to want to weigh in this. Heritage probably will. Club for Growth may weigh in as well. And then other groups that will probably key vote it as well.
Folks, the reason they do that is that way they've got a scorecard for a candidate when they come up for re-election and say this person voted thus and so on that issue. That's why we discussed that. What's going to happen in Congress this week?
Well, we've got several things. One is we've got to figure out what we're going to do with the Department of Homeland Security and also the President's unlawful amnesty action. So that's still top of mind. The Keystone override vote probably won't happen this week, but hopefully we'll get it queued up to come up soon. We're voting on a bill to enhance the use of College 529 plans or to allow families to better finance their students' college educations. Now, another one that's causing a little bit of controversy recently is a bill called the Student Success Act. And it is to reauthorize No Child Left Behind, which expired in 2009. And so that's a little bit of a misnomer because this bill guts No Child Left Behind, which nobody liked. Families didn't like it. School districts didn't like it. States didn't like it. So we're trying to give the power back to states to deal with the education of students. There are still a couple of warts in this bill. I think the committee worked real hard to undo a lot of the bad provisions of No Child Left Behind, but there's still a couple of warts that need to be dealt with. Number one is, we have an amendment that's coming from an RSC member, Republican Study Committee member, to allow states to opt out of the mandates from the Department of Education, but still receive the federal funding. That really does a lot to clean up a lot of the federal intrusion into state and local school districts. And the second amendment is an amendment that I offered that protects religious freedom for students and parents and teachers and administrators. With respect to dealing with activities in the schoolhouse, so that everybody has their First Amendment constitutional rights protected.
Yeah, if that became law, it'd be interesting because obviously Texas is only one of a handful, and literally a handful of states that do not embrace Common Core. And if you were able to loosen that up, it'd be interesting to see how many states might move to the other side of that issue if they were given the chance.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because Common Core should be a state issue. It should not be a federal government issue. And so this bill, the way it's currently written, undoes a lot of the way Common Core was jammed down the throats of states. So that's a good thing that's in the current text of the bill. Again, I think there's a couple of amendments we need to add to the bill to continue to improve it from where it is today.
We'll talk about that later. Congressman Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear our entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. When you see Ben today, be sure and say hey from the crowd back here in Texas.
I will be sure to do that.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your time this morning.
You bet, Scott. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
All right. Thanks. It's 8:47.